Hey, Jay.
Hey there, Larry. How are you?
Well, it was a weird day at work.
Yeah?
Yeah, so we were working in the lab.
Uh-huh.
And my friend, BJ.
Oh, BJ. I know
yeah,
BJ.
Yeah, BJ's yeah. BJ's great. He's great.
Yeah, great.
I know you know BJ, so this might be a little bad news for you.
Oh, no.
So he slipped on a banana.
Oh.
And then he fell
into
the threshing machine.
Oh,
and he was
BJ.
Atomized.
Oh, poor
yeah,
BJ.
So poor BJ.
Sorry,
but
BJ.
It did make me think about comedy.
The comedy. They really got it.
Once I got over mourning yeah. BJ's loss.
Well, you know, listen, if they say, that's the old Mel Brooks quote, right? The classic Mel Brooks quote is, tragedy is I cut my finger, comedy is you fall in an open sewer and die.
And that's kind of what happened. I mean, BJ was atomized, so it's yeah. not quite the sewer, but...
Well, yeah.
But anyway...
I really should. They got to put up a safety railing there.
Well, I've been asking.
Yeah, you should ask. You should ask more.
I will. Tomorrow. Yes. Tomorrow yeah. I will ask for more railings.
Yeah. But yeah, but comedy.
But it made me think about comedy and speculative fiction.
Yeah,
And there's not a lot.
Well, I feel like...
There is.
I feel like there are two... like many things that we talk about here, there are two sort of categories.
Yes.
There's the use of comedy within the world.
Correct, yeah.
Of science fiction
yes.
and fantasy.
Yes.
Most, I would say, as many things do, we roll back to sort of Star Trek as a good touchstone.
Because there was no science fiction before
right.
Star Trek.
There was no, and very little after.
Yeah, I mean, really.
Yeah, come
I
on.
Mean, it just ends with the original series.
Yeah. Well, no, Deep Space Nine, which I've now come around on as the best Star Trek that ever Star Trekked.
You are almost correct. It's the best modern Star Trek.
I've got to say, it's the best Star Trek that ever Star Trekked.
Okay, well, that will be a very special episode.
That will be a very... But anywho, but I bring up Star Trek because, you know, Star Trek, like many television shows, many serious-ish television shows, it has a number of comedy
yeah,
episodes.
Yeah, every so often they do a comedy episode.
Most clearly and obviously noted as the trouble with Tribbles being, I would
one.
Say, the
yeah.
crowning achievement of science fiction comedy episodes.
Within the context of a dramatic series.
The context of a series that is not first and foremost funny.
Yeah, it's not really known for its laughs,
no.
Star Trek.
No, it's not.
No.
But I feel like there are lots of shows that are, even if they are serious. Doctor Who
Doctor
is
Who,
very funny.
I think Doctor Who... kind of visits humor a lot more often.
Yeah.
Because, it's geared... It's certainly a family show, and I think it's
yeah.
always been a family show.
Right.
And I think it varies. Incarnations of Doctor Who has
right.
been funnier than other
right, exactly.
characters. And I think they use comedy, especially the Doctor uses humor
yeah.
in a character-driven way.
Yes, the character themselves is, like, he has a sense of humor, and he likes to use his sense of humor in his, you know, I mean, we've talked about rogues, and the Doctor is certainly amongst those.
Yeah, I mean, like, he uses humor to disarm
right.
His villains.
That's
his,
right. And his friends,
and
sometimes.
And his friends, that's true. To,
you know.
To discombobulate
yeah.
them.
There are shows that have comic characters.
Yeah.
Harcourt Fenton Mudd.
Oh, yes.
As another classic Star Trek character who exists almost purely for comedy.
Yes.
Unfortunately, people like Laxwana Troy also,
yeah.
mostly for comedy,
yeah.
and then also for just being terrible. I'm not a fan of Laxwana Troy.
Yeah, those aren't... She's okay.
Yeah.
She's okay. I'll give
and,
it
you
up.
Know, and then there's, you know, in other realms, you know, in comic books, Deadpool...
Howard the Duck.
Spider-Man is somewhat known for his
yeah,
sense of humor.
A little snarky. Ambush Bug.
Ambush Bug.
Well, I think we can't. We yeah. cannot not
right.
talk about Ambush Bug. Which you can talk
yeah.
more about Ambush Bug
yes.
in a moment.
So there's. I mean, I feel like there is.
But then there's also,
mm-hmm.
you know, so there's those that are in the context of which they are created aren't
right.
necessarily comedies, but they have comic moments.
Right. Comic overtones and how comedy is used.
Right. But then there are the ones that are purely comic.
Right. And then there's a whole other subset of things that are, like you said, purely comic.
Purely comic. Of course, like the granddaddy.
Mm-hmm.
To me, in my mind,
yeah.
the granddaddy is kind of the measuring stick.
No.
I know. I used a hard K there.
You did. Hit that K.
Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Of course. Right. Exactly. Where that is
like,
a comic... That depicts a comic universe.
I would offer to say it is the Jaws of comedy science fiction.
Ooh, ooh,
I
that's
know, right?
a good analogy, but it's,
yeah.
you are absolutely
it's
right.
It's the Jaws of
yeah.
comedy science fiction.
That's true. I was going to say, you know, Futurama.
Futurama, yeah.
There's an interesting one that started in one place and wound up in another. and I would say the Evil Dead universe.
Oh, yes.
Because
yes,
Evil Dead is very much a horror film.
Yeah.
But by the time you get to Army of Darkness, we are now in a much more comic, lighter tone thing.
Much lighter tone. I like that. It's like, no, it's like the Three Stooges just did a fucking horror film. That's what Army of Darkness is.
Well, I mean, there are parts of it that are still meant to be scary to some degree.
And you know what? There are moments in Three Stooges movies that are meant to be scary, too.
That's true.
But it's still a Three Stooges movie.
Yes, there is there's a surprising amount of eye poking.
And I just wanted this to be clear. I mean that as the highest of compliments, actually. When I say that Army of Darkness is the Three Stooges of horror, that's a compliment. Mm-hmm. That is, for me, a compliment.
High compliment.
A high compliment.
Yes. There's also, you know, things like Red Dwarf.
Yeah.
That exist in the sort of comedy space.
Yeah.
I would say Rick and Morty, even though... that is so dark.
I haven't watched.
Oh, man.
I know.
Do yourself a favor. Rick and Morty is great. Really great.
Is it the Three Stooges of comedy?
It's beyond the Three Stooges of comedy. It's the Sartre to BoJack Horseman's Kierkegaard of animated comedies. And none of those are meant as jokes.
I was hoping you were going to go with it's the Louis C.K. of
it's
cartoon.
It's
comedy.
Darker than Louis C.K.
Oh, okay.
The existentialism on display in Rick and Morty.
I'm already crying.
It honestly has, at many times, shaken me to my bones.
I'm reaching for my black turtleneck right now.
Yeah.
Before we get down, we've done the taxonomy here. What about fantasy? I mean, there's got to be. I mean, Army of Darkness is touching on fantasy, but it's not like.
I mean, there are definitely. I mean, I feel like fantasy does tend to take itself a little more seriously.
I can think
Terry
of a few
Pratchett
books.
Has a couple
That's
of
true.
Fantasy books. There's one that I remember reading.
Well, wouldn't you say all of Discworld is comedy?
Yeah, like that's the thing. Like
so that's like 40 books.
Yeah, it's anything Terry Pratchett wrote lives in that comic universe place.
There's another series, and they always do a pun on myth.
That's the one that I'm thinking about. Yeah, Myth Adventures.
But it's like Robert...
It wasn't Terry Pratchett.
Robert Altman?
Something like that.
But Robert Altman, the film director, he wrote... Oh, my God.
Director of Nashville.
The director of Nashville. He wrote a whole series of books.
But that's the one...
Myth Adventures.
The Myth Adventures, which are very... Are like laugh-out-loud funny.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's a quote that I used in my regular life many times that I got from that.
Uh-huh.
Which is, anyone who uses the phrase, as easy as taking candy from a baby, has never actually tried taking candy from a baby, attributed to Robin Hood.
Yes, it's hard.
Yeah.
But I'm trying to think of any fantasy movies or TV shows. I mean, there's campy ones, but I think they're...
Gallivant.
Oh, Gallivant. Gallivant's great.
Yeah.
Gallivant's fantastic, and I'm so sad. For those who didn't miss perhaps the greatest show ever, that's without hyperbole.
Without hyperbole.
Without hyperbole. Wow. It was a half-hour musical on ABC that was fantastic and was kind of ignored, I think. But it was supremely funny with great music by...
Alan Menken.
Alan Menken. With just fabulous performers and guest stars, and it was weird because they're half hours, but they would always show two at a time. But apparently, because they were filmed in England, it was something about a tax break or something. That's why they made them half hours. They showed them as a full hour.
Interesting.
In America, but they only did two seasons, and they're fantastic.
All right.
The guy that played Juggernaut is in it.
Oh wow!
Yeah.
What's his name?
Apparently, I refuse to remember.
Oh God, Vinny Jones.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, I like to forget that he played Juggernaut.
I like to forget that whole movie too,
because that was the worst.
The movie or his performance?
The movie is not great. His performance is like 68% of why that movie is not great. Not his performance.
Vinny,
I want you to know, I'm not saying this is not about you as an actor.
Do not kick Jay's ass.
Yeah, please do not come and kick me in the ass because you are very large. And have a long well documented history of violence, but I say the portrayal of the Juggernaut in that film is not great.
See, I'm going to disagree with
bad
you.
Comedy.
I think you're actually wrong. It's a horrible movie, and he's only 25% of why it's a horrible movie.
It's
a shit movie.
I don't know. I think I've recently become very much more enamored of the Juggernaut. I've been playing Marvel Contest of Champions.
Oh, I like Juggernaut.
He's one of my champions, and he's fun to fight with.
Yeah. That's it, everyone. Gallivant's on Netflix.
Yes.
I was not paid for this endorsement. But Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Hitchhiker's Guide.
Now,
which I'm not that deeply versed in.
Really?
I've read it. I don't know that I've read all the books in the trilogy.
Jay, it's like you can get it in one big book.
I know.
You don't even have to like put a book down to pick up another one. You can. Just
I've read,
read
Dirk Gently.
Dirk Gently's not Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
But,
it's not as funny.
I know.
It's not as good. That's right. Not as good.
Oh, Douglas Adams doesn't care now that you don't think it's as good.
It's more to the fans that are like, no, I love Dirk Gently. He's great. Dirk Gently's boring.
But
I can't believe you should. But stop at where Douglas Adams.
Well, yeah,
stopped.
No, I would only read the four books.
Yeah. You do know it started as a radio series?
I do know.
What was hilarious, a couple of hilarious things is he would write it and end on a cliffhanger and then like, oh, no, we're not going to do anymore. It's like, oh, fuck, well, now what? No, we're going to do another one. Then he'd have to figure out how to save them. And then he finally wrote one where he like, okay, great, I know the next story. They didn't pick it up. So
that's great.
But here's a fact that I found very funny.
Yeah.
In a strange sort of way. Did you ever hear the radio show?
I've never listened to the original radio show.
You should listen to the radio show. It's great. It's very British radio series. And it's very funny. And if you've ever seen the movie, not the movie with Martin Freeman, but there's
the original movie.
Yeah, yeah. They use the same cast.
Right.
And actually the same theme song, which is what I'm getting at. The theme song, which is called Journey of the Sorcerer.
Yeah.
Do you know what band created Journey of the Sorcerer?
No, now we've wandered deep into the weeds here.
The Eagles.
Wow.
It is actually off an Eagles album.
I love it.
Not like, you hear it, and it's like, this is very mystical. And a banjo.
The Eagles,
jaunty with a keyboard of the early 70s.
The Eagles were a deep band.
It was the Eagles.
The Eagles were a deep band, and people unfairly give them crap.
It was Bernie. It was Bernie Taupin, or whatever his name was, before
Bernie.
He left the band.
That's right.
But yeah, it was, it kind of blew my mind.
That's
like,
pretty cool.
The Eagles with, but anyway, for me, like, I encountered Hitchhikers very early on in I think it was 7th or 8th grade. Like, that's when you kind of... So it's juvenile
totally
humor.
Juvenile.
Totally.
But in a good way.
In a very British way. It's a very British, dry thing.
Yes.
I just loved it. And, like... And at that point, I just kind of started writing things. And it was hard not to write stuff that wasn't, like, Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Oh, yeah. You totally want it. Because it's funny and it's deep. I mean, it's not Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Mm-hmm.
I am aware of that. And it is actually very, very deeply influenced by it.
Yeah.
But I feel like Good Omens lives in that place for me.
Because I think...
Good Omens... and for those who don't know, The Good Omens is Neil Gaiman and Terry Pratchett's novel about the apocalypse that is very funny. But beyond it being funny, and this is the other thing about Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, is that it also gets at, like, deeper thoughts about the world and the universe and how the universe does operate and how it should operate and the gap between that is particularly of interest when you're sort of young and, like, in formation.
Well, and also just, like, you know, because obviously the big thing is, like, you know, for those that haven't read it, and I don't know why you haven't, you know, they're on a... At a certain point, there are these sentient mice who have used the Earth for a computer to get the answer to the question of life, the universe, and everything. And they get the answer, which is 42.
You're right.
But then they don't actually know what the question is, so they have to figure out a new computer to figure out the question. Oh, wait, I messed that up. The Earth is what was being used to figure out what the
question was.
Deep Thought, the computer... was initially had been created to figure out the answer.
And then the Earth was destroyed in order to make way for a highway.
Yeah. which I love is, like, you know, this balance between, like, what are the big questions and whether or not the big questions actually matter.
Yeah.
And because, like, we go through these books and, like, you know, Arthur Dent is kind of pulled along.
Yeah.
And you know, he doesn't really kind of... It's a while before he kind of takes agency in his own life. And, like, he's caught up in these big things and it's like... Well, there's the woman he loves. There's these things. And it's like, well, what's really important?
Yeah.
You know. But to go back to your point about Good Omens, like, I think it's very British. Like, the humor. And I think, and to me, it kind of goes back to, like, Monty Python. Like, I feel like Terry Pratchett, Neil Gaiman, and Douglas Adams, like...
all were very influenced.
Yeah.
Clearly influenced by the work of Monty Python. But it is that very British sort of sensibility that they dig into. And so many, like, British... things, and again, the ways of looking at the world.
Yeah.
But I think there's another part of it that is partly the reason those guys opted for comedy to do that thing.
Yeah.
is that there is it allows for a kind of deeper probing of the big issues and questions without getting into pretentiousness.
Yeah.
Because it's always a little cheeky and it's always a little absurd and like, you know, the cosmology, that like the presentation of how in Good Omens, you know, God and the universe works is just hysterical.
Yeah.
And at the same time is like, because it's so hysterical, you can sort of, you can deal with the existential terror of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the British stiff upper lip.
Right.
Like there's the, you know, the moment in at least, I think it's in both the TV movie version and the film version about like, I think, are they at the Vogons? I can't remember, but they have to like stand in line, and Arthur's like, I got that. I know how to cue. It's a very British, like, we know how to do this.
Exactly.
We know how to stand in line.
Exactly.
You know, that there's some sort of, like, and you could beat back the existential crisis by just, like, everything is okay.
Exactly. And, that all of those existential crises and the absurdities of modern life in Good Omens, one of the running things is this delivery man who's delivering the tokens to each of the four horsemen. And when he gets to the last one, he reads the address, reads it again, and goes, well, okay, and steps in front of a truck because he's supposed to deliver it to Death. And his message for Death is, come and see. And when Death gets the message, Death tells him, don't think of it as dying early. Don't think of it as dying. Think of it as leaving early to avoid the rush. Like, that's beautifully dark.
Yeah. But it's also like, how do you, going back to the absurdity of life,
because,
you know, in a lot of ways, life is absurd.
Yeah.
And just like Hitchhikers, it's starting with Arthur standing in front of his house, trying to prevent it from being bulldozed.
Right.
You know, because his house is going to be made way for a highway.
Yeah.
But now Earth suddenly is made.
Exactly.
And like this idea of like this absurdity that we are alone in the universe.
Yeah.
You know, and that there's always going to be something bigger.
Right.
You know, in some ways, what I loved about the Hitchhiker books, even Mostly Harmless, was the largeness of the imagination of it.
Yeah.
You know, that where, I mean, obviously there's a lot of imagination in Star Wars and Star Trek and stuff like that, but the ability to kind of bend and flex with the world.
Yeah.
That the world could always keep the, you know, the topsy-turvy, you know, the Gilbert and Sullivan topsy-turvy. Things are always going to be turning on its head, turning on its head. And that, in some ways, is a more real version of life than, like, in 42 minutes, as Captain Kirk, I will solve this problem and sleep with a couple babes.
Exactly. You know? And then, you know, the linearness of problem and solution. And I feel like that's another reason why more serious shows, and this goes, you know, all the way through today with the superhero shows, with Arrow and Flash and whatever. And like, and honestly true with in other shows as well, but I feel like sci-fi shows lean into it a little more. There's almost always a comic show. There's almost always an episode where there's some really silly villain or some really silly problem.
Yeah.
One of the highlights of all of those would be the episode of Angel where he's turned into a puppet.
Right.
And for half of the episode, Angel appears as a Muppet.
Wasn't that one written by Ben Edlund?
I think so.
The guy that created The Tick, which is now has shown its pilot on Amazon Prime.
That's right. I've got to check that out.
It's pretty
good. Ben Edlund also brings a lot of humor. Supernatural is another one that's famous for their comic episodes, often meta-comic as well. But, like, one of the guys is deathly afraid of clowns. And almost every season he is forced to face some kind of evil clown.
And Stargate.
Yeah.
Stargate would have their episodes. I remember, I think it was around their anniversary of their 1,000,000th episode, I think it was, because they did 1,000,000 episodes.
Because, across all the Stargates.
Across all the Stargates. And they were talking about, the cast was sitting around the table because somebody, they were there with a TV producer, who I guess was also an alien, and they were kind of pitching different ideas of Stargate. And one of my favorite versions of it, actually, was somebody pitched a version, because by that point in Stargate, two cast members of Farscape were now on Stargate, so they pitched a version that was basically Farscape, but the cast members were playing different roles. It was very funny, but it was a very meta thing. But we're going to go down that road. I just want to leave off that with Hitchhikers before we kind of go down, like, because there are kind of special, and I want to use quotations, special episodes that are comedy.
Right.
But with Hitchhikers, I think because it's such a monumental book, I think it's hard to write a comedy book
Oh yeah.
in its shadow. And there's very few that I feel like have succeeded especially science fiction. One I do want to kind of say I really enjoyed was Red Shirts by John Scalzi.
I've recommended
to you. And it's really, and there's kind of some moments towards the end of the book that kind of flip some scripts on its head a little bit. But for a good chunk of it, it's basically what it's like to be a red shirt on basically the Enterprise.
Right.
You know, like that we're always at a risk of dying. It's a comedy, but it's more satire, meta,
right,
fictional commentary,
mm-hmm,
on TV shows. And before we get into the special episodes, maybe I should do our sponsor of the week. If you're feeling down and depressed and you need an uplift, get Smilex. Smilex. It'll put a grin on your face. It'll make you feel like $1 million. Smilex! For those who don't know how to smile.
Oh my god. I almost feel bad about taking that money for that ad.
I don't feel bad.
Smilex.
This keeps us in business.
Alright.
I'll take money from criminals and.
We'll take money from Hydra.
Captain
America.
You know what? Hydra money spends just as well as Captain America money.
They're the same money now.
Oh, right. I forgot. Until issue 5, and then it'll be...
They haven't fixed it yet. And they're going to play this out for a while. But anyway,
let the nerd outrage happen.
But the special episodes is...
I don't know if you've gotten to it in your rewatch of Deep Space Nine, but there's an episode... Well, there's several episodes.
There are several comic episodes. I mean, basically,
anytime
I see Quark...
Yeah.
For longer than, like, the first 2 seconds,
yeah,
I'm aware that this is going to be a comic episode.
If Quark is...
it's a comic episode.
If he's the A story, this is meant to be funny.
Right.
And in my mind, it's meant to be skipped. I'm sorry, those that have created Deep Space Nine, I love you, but...
But there's...
Little Green Men.
I haven't gotten to that one yet.
It's the episode where they time travel to Roswell.
Skip
it.
I may wind up skipping that one, or I'll sleep through it. Sometimes I do that. Sometimes
as skipping?
Well, no, but it's just...
Skip it.
But yeah, I mean, that's...
But yeah, any Ferengi... You know what's funny to me? Like, the Ferengi... Do you remember... Well, I'm sorry. Yes. Do you remember when they were first introduced?
Yeah.
They were supposed to be scary.
Well, see...
That first episode...
Well...
They were meant to be scary.
Well, they were...
They had wits.
But you know the story, right?
I don't know.
You've heard this story?
I don't know.
That so when the characters were written, they were intended to be scary. They were intended to be the new Klingons.
Yeah.
And in the script, and you can tell from the way the script treats them that that's how they should be. But for some reason, and this is why writers should go to rehearsal, the director directed those actors to basically prance around the stage.
Yeah.
And act in the least terrifying manner possible.
Yeah, yeah.
And I feel like that was... There was no way to unring that bell. So in the script, they're treated as though, oh my god, the fearsome Ferengi.
But how are they supposed to... Like, and then, from the makeup, from the casting...
I know.
They had those ridiculous whips.
I feel like
they
all
had
of that...
whip lasers. They
all
were
of
whip
that
lasers.
Might have worked if they hadn't been so weird and prancy and...
They were
awful.
They were awful,
and
villains.
Unfrightening in every way.
But it's so funny watching like Captain Picard be like scared of the Ferengi.
Exactly.
It's like, dude.
And then they were never scared of the Ferengi ever
never
again.
And
the Ferengi were terribly used all through the Next Generation.
Oh my god.
But I will say this about the Ferengi, and say this about a comic character that evolves and grows beautifully, Quark. Is they do really great things, and like as much as I'm joking around about like, oh my god, it's a Grand Nagus, but those are smart and interesting. He's an interesting character,
and they have moments where the satire on capitalism works,
right?
But it's
a gentle satire.
Yeah,
on
it's
capitalism.
A gentle satire on it, and it's interesting because I think Quark is written. I feel like Quark is specifically written differently than all the other Ferengi,
right?
And Armin Shimmerman.
Armin, yep.
Is really treating it differently than the other people who are playing.
I don't know. I think you're right.
Because he just sticks out differently.
But I think that Quark is meant to be different. I feel like that's one of the things that is, again, interesting about DS9 and about the world that they create, that Quark is different from other Ferengi. And that's how he can operate in this world. even though he doesn't have the tension of, say, Nog, of I'm different from other Ferengi and I want to be my own person.
And Nog, I think, is a really interesting character. He's not a comic character.
No.
But
sometimes he is.
Yeah, but I think he grows out of that in a really interesting way. Fun fact, the guy that played Rom, he was in The Rocketeer.
No, really?
He stole the rocket pack at the beginning.
Oh, my God.
And then gets crushed in his hospital bed. Poor guy.
Poor Rom.
Poor Rom.
Nothing good happens to Rom. But, I mean, again, comic episodes or comics... I feel like there's a difference between comic episodes, where you've got a show, you know, almost like Star Trek, that's generally pretty serious, plays it pretty straight, and then it's like, hey, we're just dropping a wackiness thing into this world, versus, say, a show like Buffy the Vampire Slayer, that comedy is interwoven into everything.
Yeah, because Star Trek definitely, like Star Trek and the new... the more recent Battlestar Galactica. Mm-hmm. And there, I can think of only one episode that was kind of humor, and that was like, Guess Who's Coming to Dinner? And that was like, for the most part, it's not particularly comic. It has comic moments.
What?
Occasionally. I do think Quark also spawned, but I want to get back to comedy interwoven. Because Quark, I think, spawned like, well, we have to have a funny character, funny alien character, so that's why we got Neelix, and I think that's why we got Dr.
Like,
Phlox.
I think that's entirely true, that after Quark, they were like, oh, we need Quark.
Yeah, we need a funny, and I don't think it, anyway, but like Stargate, I think, is a good example, at least the first Stargate show, not Atlantis.
Right.
Or Stargate Universe.
Ugh.
Oh, that was not a happy show.
Did not look like a happy. Well, no. It had Robert Carlyle on it, and Robert Carlyle often indicates this is not a happy thing.
Yeah. But the first Stargate had a lot of humor. You know, I mean, it kind of has humor in the way of like the Han Solo stuff around Han Solo in the first two movies has humor, and those are a lot of fun. But they're definitely not. They have humor, but they're not comedies.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a good point about, you know, the Star Wars universe, same thing, that there are characters like Han Solo and C-3PO, to an extent Lando Calrissian, who are funny, who use humor, but they're not, but again, you can't classify those as comic.
I wouldn't call Lando, he has lighter moments within a darker episode, in a darker, you realize we are dancing around a character that we haven't talked about. In Star Wars. I know you flushed those movies
No, we're not bringing that up. Because that's...
Jar Jar.
That was not
Binks.
Comedy. That was...
Jar Jar Binks.
That was... I don't... There's no... None of that counts. That is
bad. I mean, it was... Certainly from a point of view, a racist caricature.
Yes.
It was meant to be...
Oh, my God.
I can't even finish it.
You can't.
But it was meant to be funny.
Oh, my God.
He was meant to be the Joseph Campbell trickster character. Like that whole battle scene in that episode one.
Which is the only good use...
Where he's stumbling around.
Yeah, that's the only good use of Jar Jar Binks in all of those movies. Maybe you can make an argument of the fact that he cast the vote to create the Empire. Maybe you can make that as a...
He's a kitten.
Oh, good God.
He
enrages me nearly as much as the racist robots from Transformers, from the second Transformers movie.
Yeah.
Enrage me.
What's interesting is, like, he's supposed to be this comic character. I mean, like, I think this is a good example. It's a good example of comedy. I think we need to talk about Jar Jar.
Okay, let's talk about Jar Jar.
Do you think Jar Jar failed? Because I think we both agree. He's not particularly successful. Now maybe when I show him to my 5-year-old, when he's 5,
your 5-year-old will probably enjoy it.
Maybe. I'm hoping to raise him better than that.
I think
I mean, he steps in poop, so it's fine. But do you think he fails because he's a racist character, caricature, or, I mean, that's clearly a good answer, but, or because it's not a franchise that can stretch like that.
Right. I think both of those things are true. I think, you know, Jar Jar, I think...
Because, like, it can stretch to, like, R2-D2 and C-3PO.
Right. Exactly.
But I don't think slapstick comedy...
But even R2-D2 does some slapstick comedy, but the universe can't hold... The Star Wars universe wasn't built And it's, I know we're talking about things that the creator created and he should know, but it was not built to hold that level of over-the-top slapstick caricatureness.
Because I feel like...
Because Yoda, like, all the, there are weird comedy bits, there are weird slapsticky bits woven all through those movies, and, like, the Ewoks... Like, this is the thing. I feel like you look at the Gungans, and the Gungans are the Ewoks on steroids. And the Ewoks just barely worked, and they largely worked because they were silent.
Yeah.
And, like, as silent, you could still sort of buy... You could accept the cuteness because it was tied to they're still really, really alien.
Well, what's interesting is, like... Jar Jar of the Gungans, he's the only idiot.
Right.
All the other Gungans, they're actually decent soldiers. We don't ever
really deal with any of the Gungans.
We don't really deal with. I mean,
and that's,
for Boss
again,
Nass,
this is you know, that's part of the problem.
Yeah, but I mean, because like the Ewoks, they're lovable teddy bears, and that's why they can drive the speeder bike. Ha ha ha. But like the Gungans, except for Jar Jar, are actually capable warriors.
Right, but they don't play. And this is what I mean about it.
That's why, because
it's just
bad
storytelling, because they don't play a part. We don't learn about that from the Gungans. All we really ever meet is Jar Jar.
Yeah, yeah.
And we spend all of our time with him.
Because I think it's a finer point that I don't think it's the Gungans. I think it's specifically Jar Jar that it's
right.
This slapstick. Because I'm trying to think of the slapstick moments like in the original series, and there's not a heck of a lot of intentional. I mean, like there's the stormtrooper hitting his head, but that's clearly an error.
I mean, I feel like there's stuff with R2 like putting the thing in the wrong hole and getting shocked. Putting his probe in, like
I just wanted to hear you say
that. You know, like he, I feel like
oh, but I don't think that's like a slapstick. I just feel like it's
but
not slapstick.
But it's
like
better. But, Jar Jar. But these things are better built into story. And like this is the ultimate problem with the prequels is that the stories are not well constructed as story.
Yes,
like,
I'm, and
so it's the glaring parts stand out to me better because. The bits of humor and the bits of, like, and some slapsticky stuff. I mean, there's the slap, like, not slapstippy, but, you know, the basic runner through all of Empire about the Millennium Falcon's hyperspace.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Hyperdrive, and when it's fixed and when it's not, and the regular thing of, okay, we're gonna go, nothing happens.
Yeah, yeah.
And those sort of things, the little Ugnaughts tossing around C-3PO's head.
Yeah, yeah.
But they're built into moments that have to do with character development and where the story
and,
is.
And consequence.
And consequences.
Yeah, yeah.
And the Gungans and all of the prequels are built in worlds without real consequences.
I'm kind of stuck on tone a little bit because I feel like with distance and time, like all tragedies, I look at the prequels as an attempt to be a more regal series because it's about a fall of a republic, and I think there's an attempt to have a different tone than the original series.
There is.
But then it's like it would be like I guess in my mind it's kind of like you have Hamlet. And then suddenly, like, the Three Stooges are there for a moment.
Yeah.
And then they go away, and you continue on with Hamlet.
Right.
And I'm just talking about the use of humor.
Yeah.
I'm not talking about the
Hamlet
other...
Hamlet has an entire extended slapsticky comic scene with a gravedigger.
But it has an intention...
But it has a purpose.
It has a purpose and a character-driven reason and a thematic thing.
Right.
Where I don't think Jar Jar's tripping over the arm... of a droid, and that's what kills other droids.
Yeah. It doesn't have a thematic thing.
Yeah.
It doesn't really say a thing. And, like, unfortunately, in many ways, the thematic things that it does say undercut the larger things that should be happening.
Yeah.
Because it puts, basically, Jar Jar, in the first movie, Jar Jar and Anakin on the same level, and they shouldn't be.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Anakin, we should be seeing Anakin as a preternaturally gifted pilot and fighter who, even though he's a child, is able to, through what seems like sheer luck, defeat this entire army.
Right.
But instead, we see it as just, oh, this is just more slapstick chicanery.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because he's doing basically the same thing that Jar Jar Binks did.
Yeah.
And Jar Jar Binks is not that.
Yeah, and again, I just want to say, there are other issues with the...
so many issues.
But we're just talking in terms of use of humor.
And just the use of humor.
You brought up Hardcore Felton Mudd.
Hardcore Felton Mudd?
Who As far as I know, he's the only character that appeared in two episodes.
Yes, that's
episodes.
Right. Two episodes of the original series.
As a guest.
As a guest, yeah.
I love Mudd.
Oh, God.
I think he's so great.
He's great. Again, we love Rogues. He's funny.
Yeah.
There is something, and this is something particular to the Star Trek universe, because it's so utopian.
Yeah.
And there's so, it can't help itself but look down its nose at our own society.
Yeah.
And attempt to teach us things. So there's always something, this is a similar thing to Quark, there's always something about those super avaricious, money-grubbing characters that it looks down and treats us like, oh, you simple fool, in love
with
money.
And the other character in the Treble Tribbles that you mentioned, Cyrano Jones, who has the Tribbles, who's selling the Tribbles.
Exactly. Anyone who wants to make money is looked at as such a buffoon in the Star Trek universe that it's just adorable.
Yeah.
And they're always adorable.
But I love actually, have you gotten to that episode in Deep Space Nine where the time travel? Oh goodness. It makes Treble Tribbles is great, but then when they revisit it in a time travel episode in Deep Space Nine, it actually makes it a little more delicious.
It's
really good. And that particular episode of Deep Space Nine is a comedy episode that works well.
Right.
Where some of the Quark ones don't. And then there's another one, I think it's in its seventh season, where there's something wrong with the holodeck. So they have to go, like, Ocean's 11 style, literally Ocean's 11 style, to help the hologram save his casino.
Oh, my God.
His holographic casino.
I don't know. I can't remember if we've ranted about it here, if I've ranted about it in other places. The holodecks, which are also the source of most comedy episodes of Next Generation, is the single worst concept.
It's up there, yeah.
I mean, and I don't mean this in terms of, like, storytelling. I mean this in terms of who, in their right mind, builds a device on a ship where you are allowed to create realistic, lifelike versions of anything, including your coworkers, and do anything you want to them.
Yeah, yeah.
Why that's possible? I'm like, well, you couldn't. Are there no parental controls?
Well, you don't want to go insane in outer space.
Are there no parental controls? I mean, that's all I'm asking. All I'm saying is that someone should be like, yo, guys, I should be. If I walk into the holodeck and I'm like, hi, I'd like to create Counselor Troy, it should be like, beep, beep, sorry.
Yeah, yeah.
That is not allowed.
Could you create Counselor Schmoy?
If you can, sure. But it had better be at least 7 points variation from the real Counselor Troy.
I want to talk about a classic comedy movie.
Uh-huh.
It's perhaps the pinnacle of science fiction comedy.
Oh.
You may have seen it.
Oh.
It's called Ice Pirates.
Oh, Ice Pirates.
I saw Ice Pirates in the movie theater. And I'm not entirely sure if I really enjoyed it.
Oh my God.
Because I tried to rewatch it recently. I'm like, this isn't as funny as I remember. But I think when I was a kid.
Oh God, it was the best. It was like the best thing ever.
Like the space herpes.
Yeah. Oh my God.
I didn't quite understand. This is how young I was. I didn't quite understand the castration thing that was happening, because remember at one point they're going through and they're going to be like turned into.
Right.
And they had the jaws.
Right.
And I didn't quite understand that until like years later. I'm like, they're going to cut off their dick and balls.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Right on. Okay,
right,
now
right.
I get it.
Okay, now, yeah, okay.
For those who haven't watched the cinematic classic, it starts Robert Ulrich, formerly of, well, not quite at that point. He wasn't Spencer for Hire yet.
He was not, but
he was Spencer
on his way.
To be hired with Avery Brooks as Hawk. But Ice Pirates took place in a future where water was scarce and there was a rumored planet. And so there are these pirates who would steal ice off of spaceships.
That's right.
Water was scarce, but there was this rumored planet that had 70% water. Ooh.
Ooh.
So they had to go through a wormhole.
Ooh.
Angelica Houston's also in it.
Oh my God. I do not remember. I remember it vaguely.
She's the.
It was because it was part of that wave of movies.
Oh, like Police Academy and all of that.
Well,
those,
no, it was. No, it was different. It was like there was a wave of movies, some of them comics, some not, that were all obvious Star Wars money grabs.
Yeah, yeah.
So Battle Beyond the Stars.
I love Battle Beyond
Dark
the Stars.
Dark Star is in that. As talk about another weird comic.
What was it? Battle Beyond Maelstrom. Steve, something from the Maelstrom. Some 3D
movie
with
Oh, yeah.
I remember that was my first 3D movie.
And then, yeah, so there was that hole, and then yeah, Ice Pirates was in there, and I feel like it sort of reached its pinnacle when you got to Spaceballs, and then everyone was like, we're good.
I guess we should talk about Spaceballs.
Yeah.
Why didn't we talk about Spaceballs?
I don't know, because I actually don't like Spaceballs.
It's actually not very good.
It's really bad. Guys, I'm sorry.
But you know what we could talk about?
What?
Young Frankenstein.
We could.
We should.
Which is really good.
Which is really good and is speculative fiction.
And speculative fiction.
And brilliant.
And brilliant. And much like Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, I don't know that you can, like, that movie sets the gold standard.
Yeah.
For, certainly for, like, making fun of classic horror.
Yeah.
Like, it's...
I think it's just movie spoofs in general.
Yeah. Of this, you know? Yeah. Like, all movie spoofs sort of spin off from there.
Yeah.
Even though it's smarter than nearly all of them.
Oh, my goodness. I mean, like, I do think it's one of Mel Brooks' finest.
Oh, yeah.
If not his finest. Like, I like Blazing Saddles. I like The Producers. But, like, I could just sit and rewatch Young Frankenstein over and over.
Oh, yeah.
And what I love, one of the things I love about Young Frankenstein is that it actually kind of tries to fit in with the greater Universal horror canon.
Yeah.
Like, they're not, like... spinning off from something else. They're not making, you know, like Blazing Saddles doesn't have a connection to anything else. It's just making fun of other Westerns.
Right.
But Young Frankenstein, like, no, I am the grandson.
Yep.
I've been trying to run away from it.
Yeah.
I also love that the scenes...
Frankenstein.
I also love that the scenes outside of the castle are set, or outside of the German-looking town.
Yeah.
Like when he's in the classroom, are clearly a modern day.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's clearly 1970, whatever.
Yeah.
It's just in black and white.
And then he goes back.
And then he goes back, and then suddenly it looks like the 1930s version of what.
Oh, it's,
you know,
so wonderful.
And it's just brilliant. And yep. Like, I think it uses humor well. I mean, obviously, it uses. It's just a funny movie. And I think it's timeless because. I think it's a timeless movie because it's not. It's not satire. I don't think it's satirizing.
No, it doesn't.
Anything.
It doesn't satirize. It's,
you
not.
Know,
it's not satire. It's not. It's not topical.
Yes.
And like,
yes.
There are certain parts of it. There are certain references that like may have fallen off. That people may not like. To a certain degree, people are more aware of, you know, Frankenstein's hunchbacked assistant Igor.
Yeah,
Igor.
Yeah.
Because of Igor, more than they are. From the original movies
and
anymore.
And in the original movie, the original 33 Frankenstein, it's Fritz, and he does not have a hunch.
Yeah, when did... I don't even... That's
hunch
like,
the hunch came later. The hunch was Son of Frankenstein.
Was the hunch.
And that was Bela Lugosi.
Huh.
And he was the assistant, and he was Igor.
Yeah.
And he had... Igor. He... Igor. he had... and he had the hunch because they tried to hang him.
Oh.
But his neck broke, but he did not die.
Oh.
But that's not till Son of Frankenstein, I believe.
Right. Right. But that's what I mean. That,
but
like,
yeah, but there's
all
no
of those things
and
are more related... but many of those things are now more related to Young Frankenstein than anything else.
And I think you're right when you say it's not topical.
Yeah.
Where, like... And so, I mean, a lot of humor, and I think it should kind of be about the present moment.
Right.
But that also gives a... there's a time limit to some comedies.
Absolutely.
Some comedies just don't work years later. And sometimes a year later, it's like, it's not so funny anymore.
Oh, my God. I mean, people have been saying that, and this is not exact... Well, no, it's not. But speculative
take
fiction.
Take a stand.
But people have said that about 30 Rock.
Uh-huh.
That, like, 30 Rock has about...
30 Rock is not...
I know, but I'm just saying, in terms of comedy and timeliness...
So one could argue... I have an argument of why it could be speculative fiction.
It could certainly be. I mean...
You say your point, and then we'll decide if it
that,
is or not.
That it is so... It was so hyper-topical that within 5 years, no one is going to have any frame of reference. Like, entire plots of the show will not make sense.
Yeah.
Because they were so tied to current events.
Yeah.
You know.
Why do you think would potentially be speculative fiction?
Well, they did have a whole made-up holiday, which is amazing.
I was going to go because the end ends with, like, it takes place in the future. So we had heard the story of 30 Rock as being told from the future.
Got it. Okay.
So
there you go.
It's a very
weak
argument, but
well done.
I'm going to go with that. But I think that's why Young Frankenstein kind of... could last.
Right.
Here's a question for you. Do you think Young Frankenstein requires viewing of any of the other Frankenstein movies, or could you watch it cold?
No. And but it only gets that way, and this is again what I'm saying about Young Frankenstein in some ways taking the place of those movies. All you need is the visual iconography of those movies.
So some context.
You don't need to have watched them. I'm sure when you watch it, it all makes more sense.
You get
more jokes, and there's more great things and beats or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
But without it, all you need to know is there's an evil scientist named Frankenstein.
Frankenstein.
Who creates a monster out of dead body parts.
Yeah.
And lightning, and he's big and green.
There is definitely more, because last summer I rewatched all of the Universal Frankenstein movies, so specifically those. I didn't go into the whole. I mean, I did rewatch Dracula and Wolfman, but I didn't go like the House Mummy. Of Dracula.
Right.
I didn't go to like House of Mummy. But if you watch all of them, you realize how much they pick.
Oh
from,
yeah,
like you know the guy with the middle hand,
right?
And, like, all of this stuff.
It's all taken from all that, but it's...
But it's not required.
But it's not required, because it just becomes... It lives within its own place. It's not like... Not so much like Airplane, but not like those, like, these now later day parody movie knockoffs.
Oh, like 101 Spartans or whatever.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Where it's like, there's no story
yeah,
here.
Yeah, there's no story. They're just plain up spoofing and like, wouldn't it be funny if this moment happened instead of this moment?
Exactly.
Ha, ha, ha.
Right.
But if you haven't seen the movie, you don't give a shit.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's kind of, Airplane 2, that could be speculative fiction.
Airplane 2 could be.
Not the first one. Just the second one, because it's in outer space.
Yep.
But I don't want to talk about Airplane 2.
No.
Several reasons. One, it's been like 30 years since I've seen it.
It's not that good.
It just has William Shatner in it. That's the highlight.
That's the big key.
You want to hear another science fiction comedy I just thought of?
What?
Star Trek V, the whole movie.
Not a comedy. It's a tragedy. But there is...
Oh my God, it's such a tragedy.
In that vein, I mean, it's just been repeating lately. I'm not talking about it. We did not talk about Galaxy Quest.
Why didn't we talk about Galaxy Quest?
Well, we can talk about Galaxy Quest right now.
All right, maybe it's our final thing to talk about.
Because Galaxy Quest actually is a perfect wrap up to this, because it achieves multiple things at the same time.
We'll have to talk about Ambush Bug, Deadpool, Howard the Duck another day.
Comic books.
Howard the Duck. They're funny.
Yeah, they're funny.
Ambush Bug. He knows he's in a comic book, just like Deadpool.
Just like Deadpool.
All right, done.
All right, there
Nailed
we go.
It.
Boom. But the thing about Galaxy Quest is that it functions both as a parody of Star Trek.
Yes.
Both as a comic universe, sort of unto itself.
Yes.
And as just a really good movie.
Yeah.
Like, all the character bits all work together. It's a movie that if you have only the vaguest knowledge of what Star Trek is...
Actually, probably it's best that you only have the vaguest knowledge,
You get all the jokes and all the references and, like, all you need to know just the vaguest things.
Yeah, yeah.
And it works because the characters are so well drawn.
Yeah, and I that's exactly what I was just about to say. I think what's great about Galaxy Quest is that it's... Because there's some kinds of comedies that are joke-driven comedies.
Right.
You know, I mean, I think about, like, Vince Vaughn comedies.
Yeah.
And I'm not trying to slag off on character-driven comedies or joke-driven comedies. Like, The Hangover, I think, is a joke-driven comedy. You know, it's a big joke about, like, what would happen to them. You know? And they can work really, really well. But, like, there's something with comedies that are character-driven, where their character's in a certain state, and they go through an experience, and they come out better for it.
Right.
You know, which is like kind of every movie, really.
Right.
But when you apply that paradigm to a comedy, you have a really good comedy, but then you have something that's also kind of emotional. It's an emotionally fulfilling movie. Even like the Justin Long character, who's got the tiniest storyline, but
he's got character moves.
He's got a character moves, and like, it is so, for him at the end, it's so exciting.
It's perfect.
And I think what I think also makes it a successful comedy and movie is that there are consequences to
it.
There are bad things happen to people that do not
get taken back. And they get at the like deeper things. Like, I mean, no spoilers here. I mean, everyone should see it.
Yeah.
I think it's actually playing up at the Lemley, if not this week, next week, and I should go see it. There's that great, like, to me, still one of the moments that comes to my mind almost immediately when I think about this movie, when I think about Galaxy Quest, is the part where the villain forces Tim Allen to explain what actors are.
Oh, goodness.
And he has to boil it down to basically we lied.
Yeah.
And it's just heartbreaking.
The
race does not understand lying. They don't understand stories. So he tries, and the guy says to him, you have to explain it to him as though to a child.
Yeah.
And like, yeah, there's no undoing that.
Yeah, it was heartbreaking. It's so heartbreaking. And that realization, and that's what I mean. Like, it has this emotional depth that some comedies, both science fiction and fantasy and comedy comedies, don't want to go to.
Yep.
You know, even a comedy that I think is actually good, Horrible Bosses.
Yeah.
It doesn't have.
Oh yeah.
You have
it
that moment.
Right around it.
It skates around depth.
Right.
And I would even argue Young Frankenstein has some of those emotional depth.
No, it really does.
You know. And so it's comedy that's using drama.
Right.
Where like sometimes like Buffy or the occasional episode of Star Trek where it's using comedy and it's a contextual of drama.
Right.
You know, to have those lighter, funner. Right. Funner?
Funner.
TM. Trademark.
Yep. But another great thing about Galaxy Quest that I think, and this is from the speculative fiction thing, there are so many parts of it that go kind of without explanation in great ways.
Like what?
Like the fact that Alan Rickman's character never takes off the headpiece.
He is a committed
it's
artist.
Amazing.
He stays in character.
Yeah, no, and it's just great.
It just kind of like the makeup is kind of more and more torn.
It's a little torn by the end, and you're like, and no one ever comments on it.
Yeah,
no one ever brings it up.
Whoever made that choice to do that was genius.
It's great.
It's a genius That's moment,
great.
Actually.
And
it's a great character moment because he finally. Because clearly he's the Spock analog.
What?
And it's kind of like, because Leonard Nimoy's like first autobiography was "I Am Not Spock."
Right. Exactly.
Guess what the name of the second one was?
I Am Spock.
I Am Spock.
On second thoughts.
I want to sell some more of these books, but like that's kind of the journey that Alan Rickman's character goes on.
Yeah.
Like he comes to accept this thing that he hated and loathed, and
doesn't
realize how much. It deeply affected people.
When he tells that kid at the end, by Grabthar's hammer, I will eventually... It's like a real freaking moment.
Yeah. Ugh. And I think that's why it's a successful movie and a successful comedy.
Yeah.
Because it has real moments where I think... Like, Ice Pirates, it's such a of the moment.
Right, yeah.
I mean, like, the Space Herpes joke is such an 80s joke.
Oh, my God.
I mean,
80s,
Bruce Vilanch is an 80s joke.
Bruce Vilanch.
He's in it. He's in it.
Oh, God.
And, you know,
sometimes I miss Bruce Vilanch.
There's a documentary about him, but there's such of the moment, which comedy should be. But like, when that moment passes, they're disposable,
right? And that's it's the nature of making comedy.
Yeah, yeah, you know,
yeah.
I think you just crushed that.
I think we did. I think we crushed that.
All right.
I think we nailed that.
Thanks. Yeah. All right. You did too.
Yeah.
All right. If any questions or disagreements, please tweet us at Deep Cut Nerd Pod.
If you want to stand
on
up,
Twitter.
Stand up for Deadpool.
Or if you really want to defend Spaceballs.
Or whatever.
Okay. Anyway, thank you again to Heidi. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Hey, listeners. Heidi here with an editor's update. I've got just a couple of add-ons that I can't let go unmentioned. So here I am, usurping the mic. First of all, Men in Black. I'm talking about the first one here. Men in Black is the most hilarious and joyful alien action comedy movie of all time. And here's what I love about it. It takes itself seriously. There is no winking here. I mean, Tommy Lee Jones's deadpan. Tommy Lee Jones's deadpan is perfect. And even the ever-playful Will Smith reluctantly buys into this absurd new world he's found himself in. I've always thought that Men in Black has a slightly Hitchhiker's-ish vision of the world, but with a completely American flavor. I mean, that last sequence with the galaxy on Orion's belt, it's reminiscent of Douglas Adams. Furthermore, Men in Black stands alone. Even though the movie really embraces the alien conspiracy theory zeitgeist that was so big in the 90s, this movie is not a parody. So this is the kind of comedy that stands the test of time. Oh, and hey, speaking of conspiracy theories and the 90s, anybody remember the X-Files' first foray into the whole comedic episode thing? Go rewatch it. It's called Humbug. That's the one with the circus freaks. Again, it's a serious, non-winking use of comedy. The episode is really a love letter to outsiders. At the end of the episode, best moment, one of the freaks tells Scully that human anomalies are going to go extinct. And he says something like, "I've seen the future, and it looks like that." Camera cuts to Mulder posing like a Greek statue shot from a low angle. It's classic. Added bonus, Scully eats a bug, and according to the internet, Gillian Anderson really did that. Hey, you guys, what did we forget? Tweet us at Deep Cut Nerd Pod, and thanks for listening.